with episode 534 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and somebody just bumped into me when I refilled my drink. I hope I make it through the show.
Yeah, I was getting all ready for this show, and then somebody appeared who looked exactly like me with a slightly different outfit, and things got really confusing, but I think we've got it all straightened out now, and we're ready to go.
Okay. Just as long as it doesn't happen again towards the end of the show.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it doesn't. Of course, if others who happen to be relatively looking like each other and maybe wearing blonde wigs want to show up, that would be fine. That would be a completely different set of circumstances to end the show with. But we're getting off topic here. Edmund, why don't you get us started with the disclaimer so we can jump right in?
When we actually explain all that stuff that we were just referring to, we can do that because I will then have told you that we will spoil you silly about anything that happened in these episodes we're going to talk about. Certainly the best of the week and the worst of the week, we might not give you as much detail, but then again, you might not want to waste your time on those anyway. So, as ever, we try and give you a week or so before we do that to you.
That's right. And, we might as well go ahead and start. First of all, I'll give, as I usually do, a little bit of background for this. There were 22 episodes that fell on our roster this time. So imagine the top three and bottom three only represent, what, like a quarter of that, roughly? We are definitely in the throes of February and sweeps with shows ending, shows starting. Yes, it's busy time of year. Some of those are some premieres that I'm sure people are wondering what we thought about. It's going to show up in a place you weren't expecting, I imagine. But before we do any further spoilage, like Edmund was saying, we're just going to go ahead into the top three of the week. And we see some familiar faces here. Which is a big show of consistency, I think. The number three show for the week turns out to be Agent Carter. And here's the promo.
Russia has been training young women to be undercover operatives.
ABC next Tuesday, the Russians take aim. The Americans close in.
Peggy Carter is now a fugitive and will be brought to justice.
Agent Peggy Carter.
She's here somewhere.
Is one wanted woman.
You're under arrest for treason, espionage.
There's more to this than you can understand.
New Marvel's Agent Carter, next Tuesday at 9, 8 central on ABC.
All right, and let's just do the recap here. We have Agent Carter, Season 1, Episode 6, A Sin to Error. Peggy uncovers the truth about Leviathan. Stunning amount of information in that recap right there. This episode came in at an average of 8.5, so definitely up towards the top of our list. I'm going to say this, though. Of all those 22 shows, a huge amount of them were at the above average 8 or above.
Yeah. No,
the bottom three are significantly below the 7 average mark. So we have in number 4, there's the bottom three. The next episode up is at 7, so dead average. So there is a clear top of this list and a very clear bottom. Just pointing that out. Anyway, this was 8.5, which is pretty darn good. And Edmund, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you thought? You came in actually at the lowest on this episode, which is only an 8, granted.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what were your thoughts on it?
Certainly, this was where the complications of all of Peggy's roaming around was coming to light finally, and of course her being suspected of or assumed to be in league with Stark, and now having to juggle being basically on the run from her colleagues at the same time as our Leviathan agent or agents were starting to put their plans into motion, I really like the way they were playing through some of the threads, especially the thing of of Peggy being interrupted in the locker room, and not just using that for if it wasn't just catching a glimpse of Peggy in her lingerie, but the fact that that was providing the clue to finally unmask her as the femme fatale at the club, which to me was just sort of emblematic of as strange as we may have found it for them to be so sexist and seemingly one note at the beginning. I think they've since then done a very good job of rounding out the rest of the team and making this conflict really pop. And then as well some of the back and forth with the Leviathan, the whole setup with her appearing to be ready to take out the defector or the traitor, and then not that it was a huge revelation that no, he was in fact basically the boss who had managed to now of course work his way into the inner sanctum, but not necessarily the most surprising twist, but one that I thought they still played out very, very well. I thought bringing things to a head very nicely, and what I particularly like is that it's still got that feel of where it does still feel like a modern updating of the classic old adventure serials, the old Saturday matinee short that you would get before the main movie, I think they've done it just a really exceptional job of keeping it still where it's still an exciting modern drama, but with those period pieces, those period elements still incorporated quite nicely. So it's sort of a throwback tribute on top of being a rollicking good story.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that they took on the whole idea of Peggy on the run so quickly. Maybe it's not quick when you look at it in terms of an 8-episode arc, but it certainly feels quick to me because they've been doing such a nice job of showing Peggy and Jarvis dancing this line between being caught and being effective that, yeah, like you said, that one little moment was all it took to really turn the key, so to speak, on the rest of the season. And now this episode stands revealed as one would expect from timing at the very least to be the moment of transition from complication to resolution. But it's a big change. Peggy on the run. Okay. Clearly she's going to be exonerated just as Stark will be exonerated. So how that happens is really the big question going forward. How Dottie mixed in with all of this was another nice touch. Like you said, there's just a lot of pieces kind of falling into place. And, yeah, it's maybe the only part that I wish they could then move on to is if something like this happens, Peggy's got to have a good support system and the Howling Commandos have something to do with that. I would hope so, but I doubt it because I think we would have heard by now if they were coming back again.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, where do they go from here? There's 2 episodes left. So like I said, they've got to resolve a lot in the next 2 episodes. Maybe they'll have 1 episode with her kind of trying to negotiate what's going on here. Or I'm wondering if they're going to have her, the truth start to come out in the next episode or the one after, so they can keep her in the hot seat for a little bit longer. But yeah, there's just it. The story is moving along at a really brisk pace, and I think that's what's helping this show along right now, is that there's not a lot of time for anything to be extraneous. Everything that they've introduced from the start is having a purpose in the story across the board, and that's what I'm really enjoying. Probably echoes a lot of the things that you were saying, but that makes sense. I mean, we all gave it an 8 or above, so we're probably going to like a lot of the same pieces. Dottie, I guess the only thing that kind of throws me off is that with Dottie, that it it was necessary for them, I believe, to tie in this whole idea of a proto Black Widow organization and Dottie being part of that. I wasn't expecting her to take out Peggy quite that way. That's what kind of threw me off a little bit. But then again, if she kind of unleashed the way that she would as one of the Black Widow candidates, we wouldn't be talking about Peggy Carter very much.
Exactly. Yes. And I did like the notion of that there's brains along with the kick-ass fighting skills. She could figure out what that was and then put it to use.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's like I said, the little pieces are. Nothing is extraneous. Everything has a purpose to the overall narrative, which I think we're going to miss if this show does not come back. Now, now's as good a time as any to mention that. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about the fact that, this whole switchover of, possibly Disney going into a subscription model. We talked about that a couple shows ago. But, I've heard again that Agent Carter has pretty low ratings. And, again, I'm wondering, number one, are they only looking at the, what was the term? Linear?
Linear telecast.
Thank you. It's already arcane enough, I can hardly remember it. But linear telecast, or are they looking at the big picture? Because, as I recall, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had really terrible same-day ratings, but it was the DVR ratings and the on-demand ratings that were huge. And I wonder if Agent Carter falls in the same boat. I would hope so, because again, this is a show that, while I wouldn't mind if they could maybe capitalize on the fact that they're part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and don't have to have huge ratings in order to justify its existence, it would be very easy to say, well, it was a miniseries, it didn't pan out with the ratings, let's leave it as a miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But at any rate, any other thoughts for Agent Carter?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it's been interesting. Some of the reaction, I think, more from the people who had given up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and kind of tying into what you were just saying and going, this is so much better. And it's like, well, yes, but it's an 8-episode miniseries, or intended as, whatever they were calling it, a limited event series. They were sort of playing games with the terminology a little bit. And so yes, of course, the story is going to be more focused and going faster. And of course, as we talked about last season, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was burdened with the whole, okay, we've got to try and tread water and set things up until Winter Soldier comes out. So, certainly I think that first half of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season leading into that finale, was a lot tighter and more focused, the way this is. So, I'm going to be interested to see coming out of this and back into the second part of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Perhaps this is, it's an indication that they are ready to move faster in both aspects.
Yeah, that would be nice. I'm trying to look it up right now, which hopefully it will not take long. But I could have swore, or that there is at least a possibility that E. Carter is going to be in Ant-Man. It would make sense, the timeline being the way that it is. And could they use this and or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as a way of, like, yeah, she's right here in the cast.
Right, okay.
Credited cast, So whether or not that's speculation that somebody threw it in there, because, of course, we know that IMDb is not always the most, shall we say, thorough or accurate source of information.
Yes.
In this case, I think there's a lot of people paying a lot of attention to this, so I would think that this might lead somehow into that. So there are connections to be made, and there is a rationale for keeping that option open in storytelling, in a storytelling sense, but we'll see whether or not Disney and Marvel take that bite, or if they are going to maybe feel like if they have to keep Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. around despite ratings, that they're going to let Agent Carter kind of pass as a result. I don't know. We'll see. All right, well, we might as well move on to what was the number two show of the week. And man, this show has been showing up in our top three rather often lately, and I'm a little surprised by that, especially since for a while it was very much in the average column for much of its existence, and that would be Elementary. Here's the promo.
Next Thursday, working with Sherlock Holmes is an acquired taste.
That stains horchata. Salvadoran horchata.
But once he's acquired a case...
You haven't spoken to your husband in 48 hours.
It always brings out his best.
Sounds like you found the suspect.
I found thousands of them.
New Element.
All right, and Edmund, if you don't mind doing the recap.
Certainly. This is Elementary Season 3, Episode 13, Hemlock. A debt collector is murdered, and Holmes and Watson try to narrow down the suspect pool from thousands of consumers who owed the victim money. Meanwhile, Joan's relationship with Andrew progresses when he asks her to meet his father. And, certainly, the main thing for me is that... After the kitty interlude was concluded last episode, they are now back to Holmes and Watson again. The main reason for my uptick, I've been quite clear on my dissatisfaction with the kitty arc, or as it turned out, more the way they chose to roll out the kitty arc. Now they are back to investigating what new revamped Holmes and Watson relationship, with Watson being on a more equal footing to Sherlock. She's through her mentorship phase. She's actually, even though she the job did not work out, was actually, you know, capable of being hired on her own rights. So this is the first episode where they were exploring that relationship how they were going to work things out, and it was a very nice twisty case. This was not one of those cases where they're doing some nice character work, but the case itself could be from any other CBS procedural. It was there were twists and turns and funky stuff for them to figure out. So that was nice. And then this sort of ongoing thing that looked like it could have been a burden with the boyfriend Andrew and her seeming to be settling into a more regular relationship, and Holmes needling her about whether or not that was something she really wanted, really came to a head. And not just with the infamous dinner with the father, which he insisted wasn't meeting the parents, but then she kind of realized really was meeting the parent, or parent in this case. All came to a big shocking twist at the very end of the episode, when he winds up poisoned with a coffee that was intended for her. So huge twist at the end of the episode, and one that it was one of those shocking twists that was actually shocking, and certainly was a big springboard into the next episode. So my rating on this was basically reflecting the fact that they're finally getting down to exploring the thing I wanted them to be exploring at the beginning of this season.
Well, better late than never. 13 episodes in.
Yes.
There we are. Well, that means that, unfortunately, or for however you want to put it, I don't watch this show in particular, but I certainly do watch the number one show for the week, and I don't know that anyone is overly surprised by this, other than the fact that it wasn't some other show that usually gets this type of accolade. But we'll talk about that one eventually, I'm sure. But this one is Arrow, and here is the promo.
May I suggest a grand finale?
Looks like Vertigo's back in business. Suit up.
This ends now.
Feeling my vertigo.
Hi, sis.
You're not real.
And that would be Arrow Season 3, Episode 13, Canaries. Vertigo causes Laurel to hallucinate an epic fight that pits her Black Canary against her sister Sarah. Meanwhile, Chase surprises Thea, and Roy warns Thea to stay away from Malcolm. All right, well, this episode got from our collective group here an 8.83, so definitely way up there towards the top of the list, not just for this week, but in terms of episodes of Arrow, and I just want to see that this one wind up taking the top spot. Very close. Very close, but not quite. However, it is on the level of The Climb and The Magician, which were some pretty big episodes. Not to mention coming in at pretty much the same score as Sarah, which was the last time that we saw the actress in the role as Black Canary.
Yes,
or at least the actress. Not really doing much, but the actress. Yeah, so Edmund, any thoughts on this one to start us off?
Well, I thought I like the way that they've been playing out these conflicts. Certainly with Laurel trying to take on the mantle, and certainly the finally realizing that she has to let her dad in on what's actually been happening, and just have faith in the fact that his heart can take it, which lo and behold, of course, it could. But all throughout this episode, I mean, there was that conflict going in. I mean, the Laurel's internal conflict is which the Vertigo was bringing out, the overt conflicts within the team, with Felicity and Roy and Diggle basically getting on Oliver's case about the way he was just marching back in and assuming he could just take over and everything would be the way it was, and not the fact that he had to adjust to the fact that that they had been on their own and had been working things out. Perhaps Diggle can't shoot an arrow as well as Oliver, but they were managing to take care of things, and then as well with it was certainly nice to see the DJ as planted assassin arc get taken care of so quickly, since he really was an annoying character, and it allowed us to focus on Malcolm and Thea and Roy, which was some much more interesting developments. And yeah, it was one of those episodes where they were juggling a lot of different things, and but I think managed to pull them off rather well. The only thing that our scores were very high, and I would say what maybe kept it a little bit down was our Vertigo King, our new Vertigo King for this season, Peter Stormare, is still just a bit of a stock madman character. So other than that,
you mean his chewing of the scenery was just not your... Yeah, that was probably the one thing that was holding me back even a little bit from a higher score.
Yeah.
Because, man, this was just brutal in so many ways. The conversation between... no matter how well it went, the conversation between Oliver and Thea was... I didn't expect that to happen at all, and it was just really hard to take. And then you had Laurel telling the truth to her father,
mm-hmm.
which I mean, Lance, you know, Detective Lance, Officer Lance, whatever, Quentin, whatever he is now, hasn't been the best of characters for the show. But in that moment, I was sold about as much as a person can be sold on what was going on. And wow, it was just very powerful. The Vertigo thing was the weakest part of the entire business, though. I mean, I will admit, they could have done that a little bit better in order to drive home. I think they are trying to maintain the madness of the character from the comics, and that's what's holding the whole thing back. I'm not familiar with the character all that much from the comics, but I can only imagine there's got to be a reason why both of the people who went with the Vertigo King thing, or King Vertigo, Count Vertigo, whatever title he happens to assume today, that there's a really good reason for that. Because otherwise it's kind of out of place in many respects.
Yeah, certainly with the amount of very real conflict and sort of true emotions coming out in the rest of the storylines, I think that in particular just really highlighted how stereotypical the Vertigo stuff was.
Yeah, absolutely. I also have to say this, that, you know, as much as people really kind of dig at Laurel as Black Canary, I thought that she did a perfectly good job in this episode of, you know, kind of, if not making, you know, me entirely sympathetic to her as the character, then at least driving home to me that Katie Cassidy can do this and hold her own.
Yes, definitely.
Let's see, what else can we say about Arrow?
Well, I was just trying to think, and I guess the fact that I'm having trouble remembering exactly what was going on in terms of how the flashback. I think the flashbacks are Yeah, we're not necessarily tying in as much as they have been. So that seemed not quite up to the standard of the recent episodes. But again, not a major detraction.
Hmm. Yeah, just a minor thing, right? Okay, well, that is our top three for this week, and what we ought to do here is take a mid-show break, and when we come back, we're going to tackle the bottom three. Stay tuned. Alright, so we are back with the bottom three, and as usual, we're not going to go with any promos for these because, well, why spend that much time and effort on them? Because the producers apparently didn't. What's very interesting about this bottom three is, well, we have a familiar face, but then we have some new faces here.
Yes.
And even accounting for the fact that usually shows when they start out struggle to get above even a six or so in the scoring that we typically do. Well, in this case, we have shows that are struggling even more than that. So it's just something to keep in mind. All three of the shows that are below or in the bottom three are below seven, significantly below seven, below six, in fact. And I don't think we've seen this delineation between the bottom three and the rest of the content in a long time.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and start with the third bottom show, and that would be Helix, Season 2, Episode 4, Densho. Michael struggles to keep the Abbey under control as the CDC team move closer towards tracking the source of the pathogen. At the same time, Alan fights the urge to rejoin his former colleagues and comes to terms with reality about Peter's allegiances. In the future, Walker takes a risk attempting to escape her delusional father.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I think the moment this show really did completely jump the shark for me was the Mayberry Andy Griffith interlude, which really made me wonder, why are we even bothering with this future storyline?
Yeah, there's that. First of all, this episode came in at a 5.5.
Yeah.
Which even I'm just gonna go take a look. I don't know that I really should feel the need, but I'm going to take a look. I am going to say this show is right now out of... I'm going to drop a number here. Out of... Let's see, how many of them are there? 47 shows that we have covered in some way, shape, or form this season, mm-hmm. since June.
Mm-hmm.
This is coming in at 46.
Yeah.
The only show that is rated below this overall for the entire for its season is Dominion, which we stopped reviewing almost immediately.
Yes.
So that should tell you Helix not doing so well.
Yeah, it also tells me that yes, I think sci-fi might have a slot for a decent show with supernatural tendencies.
Yeah, maybe. This is also the lowest scored episode of the series at all. Let me just make sure of that because I do have a difference in. Nope, this is the lowest scored episode of Helix to date.
Yeah, well, I know. My ratings have been steadily dropping, and we're only at the fourth episode. So who knows where it might reach if I still keep up.
The show is on life support. That's the nicest way to put it. And I'm really struggling to understand why they went the way that they did, because the show has literally. It wasn't making sense in the first season, and it's almost like I keep saying they're doubling down on it again and again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, going with these dual plot lines, neither of which seem to really relate, other than the fact that it's some of the same characters running around, to what was happening in the first season. It's just a very strange state of affairs.
It really is. What else to say about this? They just keep going ridiculous. And I guess they introduced the problem of the 15-month labor just in time to eliminate it?
Apparently. And so far as we know, yeah, she doesn't have magic rejuvenating properties. But I haven't seen the next episode yet, so who knows what they might have dreamt up.
Yeah, exactly. Dreamt up is one way of putting it.
Yeah.
An extremely good way of putting it. All right, let's see. Why don't you go ahead and take the next one?
Certainly. The next one is actually the aforementioned, in our previous episode, pilot for Better Call Saul, titled Uno. At least it's better than calling it pilot, I guess. But the opener of a prequel tracing the evolution of Breaking Bad lawyer Saul Goodman finds Jimmy McGill working his magic in the courtroom. Then unexpected inspiration leads him and... Oh, lovely. It's cutting me off. Yes. Excuse me. I'm having browser difficulties.
Understandable, I suppose.
Yes.
Since it was having show difficulties.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I literally cannot get that last line to pull up.
Okay, let's see if I can get it any better here. So, let's see.
Unexpected inspiration leads him to an unconventional pursuit...
of potential clients.
Ah, there we go. Yes. Okay. I remember that. Me and Gary have weighed in so far, we have given it an average of 5.25. And I know for me, it just felt a little, or not just a little, quite wayward. The setup was lackadaisical. They threw in this sort of avant-garde black and white sort of in intro, which apparently is Saul, the older Saul, now forced to work in a Cinnabon outlet in a mall, and then going home and pulling out a videotape of all his old Better Call Saul commercials, sort of reliving reliving the glory days of back in the Breaking Bad era, and then jumping forward, jumping back, whichever way you want to term it, to his beginnings, it just seemed to be taking a long time to sort of gain any traction. And when what I found even more bizarre was it was kind of spinning its wheels in places, feeling the sequences that were just too stretched out, and for some reason AMC had actually given them one of those 75 minute slots like FX does a lot for Justified and for The Americans, and they didn't seem to have enough plot to even fill 60, let alone 75, and the whole unconventional pursuit of clients at the end was when things sort of started to pick up, and then it basically all led to a bit of a cliffhanger ending, which is promising more interesting stuff in the second episode, but it just wasn't really coming together for me in this first one, and there was an odd circumstance where as I was fast forwarding through the commercials, I see Bryan Cranston appearing on screen, and I'm thinking, oh, they've got Bryan Cranston to say something about, I caught him saying pilot, and so I then rewound it and heard it from the beginning, but it was actually a Bryan Cranston testimonial going on and on about how amazing it was when he and his wife watched the Mad Men pilot, and so it basically was prepping us for the return of Mad Men and the end of an era, and all it was doing for me was reminding me that, oh yeah, there's these two pilots that AMC has done in the last 10 years that were absolutely amazing out of the gate, Mad Men and Breaking Bad, and this isn't comparing well to either of those. So I will certainly keep giving it a chance. As I said, once they sort of got through all that until the end of the episode, there was some more interesting stuff going on, but it kind of felt like maybe this is a case of one of those issues where you have these wonderful creative writers and you give them a little too much latitude, and maybe they should just tighten things up, and these two episodes could have been just condensed into one really killer pilot episode.
Quite possibly. I mean, I just haven't heard much good about this at all. So I'm a little surprised that they had plenty of time to work on this.
Yes.
They also had plenty of time for someone to come along and tell them, this is a really bad idea. because I still don't understand why this would be a good idea. Taking what is kind of, in certain sense, a running joke, I guess, mm-hmm. of a background, and turning it into, I don't even know what. I don't know. I'm struggling to understand the relevance when the show really doesn't even need to exist. Am I completely misreading this, because I'm not a Breaking Bad fan?
But this is the thing. I mean, in terms of the setup, it really has nothing to do with Breaking Bad, other than that this is a character who winds up there. Because certainly, unlike the brilliant one line, I'm not even elevator pitch, just like walking out of the elevator door pitch that Vince Gilligan had for Breaking Bad of Mr. Chips, how Mr. Chips becomes Scarface. We know where Saul Goodman's going to wind up. In fact, they just showed it to us at the very beginning of this episode, and he isn't really starting off much better, and we've seen what happens in between, or will eventually happen in between. So this is certainly not a character with a very strong dramatic arc to begin with. So as I say, certainly if I can hang in on Helix for at least four episodes, I can certainly give Saul at least that much of a shot.
I guess so. We'll have to see what that shot turns into, though. Let's see. Well, you also are the only one who watched our bottom show.
Yes.
If Better Call Saul disappointed with a pilot start at 5.25, this started off with a disappointing 5.
Yeah.
And that would be,
and this would be
for posterity,
Allegiance. Certainly having me being the only one to weigh in on this might be a little unfair, but I doubt it. As season one, episode one, they did go with pilot in the series premiere of this drama. A CIA rookie gets his first case and unknowingly investigates his parents, who are part of a Russian sleeper cell. And actually even that recap kind of got the plot a little wrong, such as it was. But of course this is the show that, bears striking resemblance to The Americans, in terms of being about a older married couple with kids who have actually been secretly spying for the Russians, although they have made it a little closer to that that story that kind of inspired the Americans from a few years back, where so far as I can tell, the parents anyway haven't really been active for quite some time. So they're not it's not completely like Philip and Elizabeth. This show is also, of course, part of that new NBC Thursday and is following The Blacklist, and unfortunately is carrying on more the Blacklist's tradition of completely over the top and implausible sort of show mechanics and situations, and it is just a huge mishmash of implausible things, and just some real tropes, like this their son, who is this brilliant CIA rookie analyst, who of course it's unclear whether he had some sort of Asperger's or autistic tendencies, although I mean he's much more socially integrated, or at least is now, thanks to the ministrations of his Russian doctor mom, or Russian descent doctor mom, and then it turns out that yes, it's not just the parents. His older sister is also in on it. It's just him and the younger sister who are out of the loop. Certainly compared to Oleg and Arkady over on the Americans, this is much more mustache twirling Boris and Natasha type embassy goings on. Yeah, I mean, it was sort of, right from the opening, where they were doing this, this Russian agent who was getting fed into a furnace as punishment, you kind of got the sense that this was going to be completely over the top. I think I will need to keep checking in on it just to see just how absurd and ridiculous it goes. This was not good, and especially not with that other show out there. I'd already was aware of it from the trailers, but certainly, of course, Hope Davis is the mother, is nothing like Kerry Russell, but Scott Cohen, who they got to play the dad, he's like Matthew Reese's lost brother. the physical resemblance, of the way they even did like his hair almost the same. I mean, there are times when out of the corner of your eye, you keep thinking it's Matthew Reese,
Yeah, because it makes sense to ensure that the characters look exactly the same.
Yeah,
right?
So if you're channel surfing, you might stop thinking, "Oh, it's the Americans," and get sucked in, or go running away in horror.
Fooled hardly, yes. Yeah, I've got to say that I was kind of intrigued, and then I got the initial response and said no. I can't say that I'm particularly sad that I did so.
No.
So that show came in at a dead 5. I mean, it's...
All puns intended, yes.
Yeah, it's... Part of the reason also that I wasn't going to go with it is not just the critical reception, but the ratings apparently are terrible right out of the gate.
Right.
I don't think this fooled anybody, Edmund. Really,
no.
It didn't.
No.
Everyone knows that this is just a poor copy of The Americans, and the real one is on right now.
Yes, exactly.
But anyway, that's the bottom three. And so those are your top and your bottom for this week, and a little bit of a short show this time around, but then when we come back next time, we're going to pretty much run down the rest of the shows that came out. Like I said, there were quite a few.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.